Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma. I'm so glad that you decided to join us today for this episode. We have a fabulous guest on that I know you're going to love. And so let's get the housekeeping measures out of the way so that we can start chatting. First of all, make sure that you're subscribed to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform so that you don't miss a thing. You want to be getting these notifications when new episodes come up so that you get to hear all of these fabulous authors that I have lined up and all of our great chats about Christian historical fiction. Second thing, I'm going to be putting this author's information and links to her book in the show notes. So after you're done listening to the show, go to christianhistoricalfiction.buzzsprout.com and check that out. Read a little bit more about this book and this author. And if you have not read the book yet, click on that link and you're going to want to read it. It's really fabulous. So that's it. We're done with the housekeeping measures and we can go on and introduce today's guest. I am so pleased that Amy Lynn Green is with us. She is a new author with a new book out called Things We Didn't Say. It is a novel that is set in Minnesota in a prisoner of war camp for German POWs. And it's written as an epistolary, which means it's written all in letters. So there's no dialogue between the characters or anything like that. It's all letters. It's a very different style, but she does it so very well so that you're very engaged and very invested in these characters. She's going to tell you a little bit about herself, but she's a delightful woman who is in the publishing industry. She's a library lover. She survives the long Minnesota winters, and she enjoys encouraging established and inspiring authors in their publication journeys. So you'll want to be sure to check her out as well on her Facebook and Instagram. And like I said, pick up her book, Things We Didn't Say. And welcome to the show, Amy. It's so good to have you along today.
Thanks for inviting me, Liz.
Well, it is certainly our pleasure. When I saw this book coming out, Things We Didn't Say, I was so excited by it, and I picked it up right away and read it and absolutely loved it. So it's our honor to have you along.
Ah, well, and I love talking about books and especially historical fiction, so there's no place I'd rather be.
Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So Amy Lynn Green, and this is my first novel. I've been thinking about writing fiction for quite some time. I've done some freelance writing more in the nonfiction area, but hadn't quite finished a novel that I was proud enough to show anyone before this. I also work in publishing as my day job, so I have some interesting experiences on that side of things. I work in marketing, and I live in Minnesota, where Things We Didn't Say is set. So part of the fun of writing this book was learning a little bit more about the state that I moved to after college, which was a fun adventure, and learning some stories that I could tell from the history of Minnesota.
Wow, that is interesting. So what do you said you work in publishing during the day, what and in marketing. So exactly what do you do?
Yeah, so I'm the fiction publicist at Bethany House Publishers, which some people are just now connecting the dots between my writing life and my publicity life, because I have a lot of contact with both authors and readers as part of that role. I describe it as most marketing that doesn't require advertising dollars. So things like setting up book signings at bookstores, sending out review copies, events when that was a thing, which currently it's kind of slowed down on that. Right. But doing our social media, doing blogs, helping authors with their own personal marketing of books, all of those things follow under my domain, setting up interviews and connecting books generally with readers. So I have that kind of marketing hat. All authors have to kind of have a marketing mindset, but I started with that marketing mindset and then moved from that to an author mindset, which has provided some fun opportunities.
I'm sure that has and really gives you a leg up because you already know the marketing side, whereas a lot of authors come to it with a book and don't know how to get it out there in front of readers.
Sure. And that can definitely be a challenge. Although, of course, I'm learning that it's always easier to tell other people how they should do things than to actually put it into practice yourself. So I have a lot more empathy for the authors that I work with after being on this side of the desk.
So true. So true. Now, what inspired you to write Things We Couldn't Say?
Well, one thing is that I've always really enjoyed writing letters, and I've picked the format of the book before I did anything else. So the book is written entirely in letters, newspaper articles, and other documents, which is what's called an epistolary novel. And I had read a few of them and really enjoyed them, especially the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which is the longest book title ever. But it's
yes!
delightful.
Oh, but I love that one. Oh, I love that one. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just love, love, love that book and movie.
It's never an interruption to gush about books. That was one of the ones that made me say, man, it would be so fun if I could do this. And there weren't a lot of faith-based storylines in epistolary novels that I'd seen, especially historical ones. So I thought, might as well give this a shot. And after I had decided I wanted to write an epistolary novel, I threw around a few ideas of plot lines. And the one that stood out to me as being the most interesting was about the fact that there were over a dozen German prisoner of war camps in Minnesota during World War II. And the thing that triggered the epistolary novel idea in my mind was that they had to censor the mail of prisoners who wrote back to their families in Germany. And I thought, ooh, letters. That seems like it would be a good place to start. And the story took on a whole new life of its own from there because the letters didn't actually end up mostly being between the prisoners of war and their family, although there are a few of those. But the story ended up becoming about the translator in the camp, who was a civilian young woman named Jo, and she became the inspiration for the rest of the story and her personality and her quirks, what she did want to do and what she didn't want to do, and the way that she interacted with those around her became the driving force of the story. So started with the format, moved to a little historical research tidbit, and then from there I developed the character and the whole thing took off from there.
Was it difficult, do you think, more difficult with an epistolary novel than a regular one, to develop their characters and to get their personalities down on the page?
Boy, you know, so many people have asked that, and I feel like I should say yes, because it seems like it would be harder, but I actually think the opposite is true. So when writing a traditionally narrated story, you are looking at other people from the perspective of whoever your point of view character is. When you're writing an epistolary novel, you get to be each one of those individual characters. So I have, you know, the town's quirky barber, and he writes one letter in the book, but I get to be him for that one letter and think about how he would phrase things differently and the way that he would work in his little advertisements for his barber shop in the letter. And he's kind of more of a folksy voice and uses idioms that other people wouldn't have. And I get a chance to step into his shoes and write like he would. So it's kind of like a book entirely in dialogue in some ways instead of description. So it was a little bit harder to convey things like what the characters looked like, but personality, we all know that comes through talking to people. And the letters are people's way of talking to both the people they're writing the letters to and to the readers of the book. So really had a fun time with writing all of those letters. And again, some of the plotting elements were a little bit harder, but the character development never was. Although I will say, one of the things I did in the editing process was I made a list of all of the characters and what some of the things I could do to them to make them sound distinct from other characters would be. So certain characters write in long sentences because they're wordy. I have one character who uses so many exclamation points that my editor had to make a note for the copy editors to say, like, please don't delete any of these. These are on purpose.
Which was fun. Yeah.
So things like that where you can give distinct, you can intentionally go back through and put in some of those things to make sure that every individual character sounds different from the others.
Well, that is an interesting way to write, and I suppose in a way it must be freeing. And that you mentioned that there were quite a number of German POW camps in Minnesota during the war. Mm-hmm. Did you take any inspiration from any one of them in particular?
There were a few of them that I drew inspiration from. So some of the ones in Minnesota further up north were logging ones where they were cutting down trees. And in mine, they were working on farms. So there were several camps in central Minnesota that I used as a basis. There was another camp with a particular incident involving the men of the camp that I can't say because spoilers, that was based, that I used in the storyline. But one of the great things about writing this book was I was able to go to the Prisoner of War Museum in Algona, Iowa, where Algona was the center for all of the Midwest prisoner of war camps. They were scattered all around the Midwest. And they had so many great resources there, newspaper articles about the camps in the town, lots of photos, artwork that the men had done. And they had whole books of letters that some of the prisoners of war there had written. And I just got to page through those and hear the voices of the people who were actually in the camps. And that, to me, was what was the most helpful in writing these stories, is that when I could hear the stories and the lives and the personalities of these men who stayed at the camps, it just made them come alive to me.
Wow, that's so interesting and must have been so much fun to do. So you really do enjoy the research?
I enjoy that kind of research. Every now and then when I'm looking for some small fiddly little detail that I just can't find anywhere, I get frustrated with it. But when it's stuff like that, when you get to read firsthand accounts of people who experience these things, it's just a joy. And I found out afterward, actually, that I just got married this year, and my husband's grandma worked at a factory in Minnesota with German prisoners of war. So hearing her experience afterward was really fun. And what a coincidence. It was one of the canneries that I had actually studied in writing this book.
Oh, how cool. What a neat connection to find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easy to forget sometimes how recent some of this history is, and a very exciting thing when you're able to do research and talk to people who are still alive who remember some of these things.
That must have been a really interesting chat you had with her.
Yes, it was. I only wish I had had it in time to maybe include a few of those details in the book, but by then it was already published.
Right. Well, maybe in the next one.
Yep, maybe in the next one.
What did she think of the book? Has she read it?
She started it and she's enjoying it. So it's fun to be able to see actual people I know who have experience with prisoners of war getting a chance to read the book.
That is exciting. Why did the heroine, Johanna Berglund, she really came to sympathize with the German prisoners of war in the camp. At first, there was a lot of hostility, and there was a lot of hostility in the town. But she became really sympathetic to them. Why have her become sympathetic? Why was she sympathetic to them?
Yeah, the reason I included that as the general storyline is because that's what I saw in a lot of my primary source materials. You would see a lot in the newspaper articles of the town when the camp first arrived, of people protesting and people really concerned about safety. And by the end of the prisoners of war time working there, there was almost the opposite problem, where camp commanders were saying, like, please don't, like, bring meals to the men in the camp. Like, that's not acceptable. And, like, don't give them cigarettes and money. Like, that could become a hazard if they were to ever to escape. So just seeing the shift in tone as people realized, you know, a lot of these, the particular camps in Minnesota were not for Nazi prisoners of war, people who had actually joined the Nazi party and were members of the more elite ranks. These were just average, everyday Germans who were drafted into the war or just joined the war because that's what you did. You protect your country. And they had no personal beliefs that were hostile to America in a lot of cases. And because of that, there was a lot of commonality in human nature. Americans could acknowledge both that we were at war with Germany and they were the enemy, and that they didn't have to personally hate these individual men. And seeing that dynamic, it's a really challenging one to say, what does it look like to love your neighbor when your neighbor is your enemy? And that's a question that really intrigued me when I did the research and wanted to include that in the book in some way as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. I found in my own research of a prisoner of war camp near where I live in Wisconsin, the same kind of thing, that they really were very accepting in the, for the most part, of having these German POWs here. And where I live is very German. And in some cases, they even found out that they had cousins or something like that who were prisoners of war. So that made for a very interesting dynamic as well.
Ah, that's, yes, that is a very funny thing. There was one Minnesota community called New Ulm, which obviously is named after Ulm in Germany, where they had so many problems because of the German population of so many escapes. And when I say escapes, what I mean is the men would crawl underneath the fence and go have dinner at a local family's house because the food was better than in the camp and then come back. So they had to watch out for things like that. So in some cases, the friendliness maybe went a little bit too far, and I'm sure the army was pretty exasperated with people, but does go to show that there are places to find common ground with the people who you have political differences with.
Definitely. And really an intriguing question that you raise in the book. How do you love an individual person even when the group is your enemy? And I think you did a brilliant job of doing that. And along with that, you have the hero is Peter Ito, who is a Japanese American. Can you tell us a little bit about him and why you created that character?
Sure. As I did research about what Minnesota was up to during World War II, the most interesting thing I found wasn't the prisoner of war camps. It was the fact that literally 6 miles away from my house, there used to be a secret school for translators and spies and hostage negotiators. And the reason that was in Minnesota, of all the places, like you would just wonder, how did this even happen, was because it used to be in California. And then because of anti-Japanese American sentiment, California and all of the West Coast, as you know, put Japanese Americans in internment camps. And this was an army school, so the men in this camp were not forced to be in internment camps, but many of their family members were. So they were in Minnesota studying Japanese, especially like military terminology and other things that would be a little bit more specific than their general knowledge of Japanese, in order to serve the country that was keeping their families in an internment camp. And that dynamic just really drew me in. And reading some of their letters and some of their thoughts and perspectives, I just knew I had to include it in this book. So I made Joe's best friend, Peter, one of the main characters who she corresponds with. So you get to hear a little bit about what he's up to at the translator school as one of the instructors there. And she gets to relay what's going on with her as the translator at this prisoner of war camp. So, a lot of fun. Peter is by far my favorite character. Peter's everyone's favorite character because Peter is a delightful person. And I feel no shame in admitting this because he was based so heavily on actual people who were true heroes. So I don't care if everyone just loves Peter. I think Peter deserves it.
He certainly does. And I would have to agree. I really loved Peter and I cheered for him throughout the book. And I just, he's somebody you would like to sit down and have a cup of tea with. I read on your website that you are a tea lover. Is that correct?
I am a tea lover. I figured at one point I decided for some reason I didn't like tea, but I also don't like coffee. And when you live in Minnesota, you have to have a hot beverage that you do like, or you just won't survive the winter. So come to love many varieties of tea.
And which would you say is your favorite?
I drink a cup of hot cinnamon spice tea every morning, pretty much in the winter time. So that's definitely my favorite. It's a black tea.
Ooh, I bet that smells wonderful too as it's brewing.
Oh, it smells so great.
Are you a tea bag girl or do you have the loose leaf that you steep?
I'm not particular enough to have loose leaf tea. I know I have several friends who that's the only thing they can drink. I'm just not sophisticated. Like, I got into this tea thing late. Maybe eventually I will develop that level of sophistication, but I'm fine with my old tea bags.
Well, we won't judge you for your tea bags.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I take it you're a loose leaf tea person, Liz. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I will drink from tea bags, but I do really like my loose leaf tea. And my husband bought me a Japanese an iron Japanese teapot one year for Christmas. Oh. So yeah, it's really yummy that way. And have your own little teapot is really cool.
Wow, that is lovely. You are next level tea drinker, Liz. I admire you and aspire to be what you are someday.
This is your first book, as you mentioned. So tell us, what was it like when you got the call that your book was going to be published?
This isn't a normal story. So prepare for that. A lot of everybody's publication story is different. So I should just say that. And all of them are wonderful. Much like everyone's testimony is different and they're all wonderful. But how it happened with me was that I had shown part of this manuscript to one of the editors who is my coworker at Bethany House, just to say like, hey, I've started writing fiction. I want to know what you think about this. Do you feel like there's room in the market for a story like this? I haven't seen it done before. So just want to get your opinion on that before I work on it. And he really liked it and said, like, I want you to finish this and I want you to bring this back to me. And so it took me another, I don't know, 8 to 10 months of writing to finish and edit a little bit, and then brought it back to him. And he said, you know, I think that this is a unique enough storyline that we should take this to our publication board, where they decide who to give contracts to. But he said, like, I don't want other people to know that this is you. So when I talk about it to the other editors and the other people on the team, I want to have this under a pen name. And so I ended up creating this book proposal for the book under a completely fake name that no one knew it was me. And I think a few people guessed along the way, but most of the people in the room had no idea I was the one who wrote this. In fact, at one point, our copywriter who goes to those meetings came into my office and said, first of all, like, hey, have you read this book? I feel like the sense of humor in it really reminds me of you. Which just cracked me up. And I was like, oh yeah, been super busy, haven't gotten to it yet, because she was going to ask me what I thought of it, which what am I supposed to say at that point? Like, yeah, I think it's fantastic.
The best thing ever.
Right. But she also said, like, this author has like a really good marketing plan, but I checked and I couldn't find her anywhere on social media, and she doesn't have a website. And I just feel like that's really weird. Do you think that's weird? Maybe it's a pen name or something like that. Like, bring it up at pub board. We'll see. And then I conveniently scheduled a different meeting at the same time as our pub board and didn't show up to that meeting, which is good because that could have been super awkward. And they talked about it. They discussed the pros and the cons. My editor did not really react when our copywriter brought up the fact that she couldn't find this author anywhere, and she thought that was strange. And then afterward, when they had said, like, yeah, we want to move forward with this, my editor said, and you all know that this was Amy Green who wrote this. And there was like this silence. And then everyone ended up finding out and coming to my office, and we all had a good time celebrating. So that was a lot of fun, a weird story, but it was good to know that the book was able to be published on its own merit and not just because people at my work were my friends, which was the idea, and also to make it so that they were able to say no if they really didn't feel like it was a good concept. So,
right. Well, that was a great idea. And I'm so glad that it turned out for you, because it is a fabulous book and definitely stands on its own merit.
Well, it's very fun to be able to tell that particular story. I enjoy telling that one.
That is a fun story. I would agree with that. So what's up next for you?
Yeah, so I just turned in the edits for another book that's going to be coming out in September 2021 called The Lines Between Us. And it follows the story of, it's more of a historical mystery following an accidental injury of a smoke jumper who is a conscientious objector during World War II and is parachuting into wildfires rather than go against his conscience and enlist in the war effort. And just had a blast writing the mystery elements of that story, a lot of research. This one has some epistolary elements in that the prologue and epilogue are written in letters, and there are a few letter sections throughout the book, but the rest of it is told in a more traditional narrative style, which was also fun to be able to play around with something completely different.
Right. Well, that sounds really fascinating, and we will be looking for that come September 2021. And what was the title of that again?
It's called The Lines Between Us. This might be the first time I've actually said the title out loud because we just finalized it recently. So that's pretty exciting.
That is exciting. Very cool. Well, we're glad that there's more coming from you because we definitely enjoyed this one.
Well, good. I'm excited to see what happens next myself.
Do you have any last words for the listeners? Anything you'd like them to know or want to tell them about?
I guess maybe just as you, if you get a chance to read this book, I hope it inspires you to be able to maybe write a note to someone you care about. Maybe think about some of these issues that we had going on in World War II. It also just surprised me how much the questions people were asking in the 1940s are very similar to some of the questions we're asking today. So that was a really great experience for me as a writer to think about how does my faith relate to these really difficult questions today, just like my characters were wondering the same thing. So I hope it does that for you, and I hope that you enjoy a good old-fashioned letter along with Jo and her friends.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Amy. It was truly a pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you, Liz. This was a lot of fun.
Well, that's about all the time that we have for today. Thank you so much again to Amy Lynn Green for joining us and for being such a delightful guest. Like I said, make sure that you're subscribed to Christian Historical Fiction Talk so that you don't miss out on any of the other great guests that are coming up. In our next episode, we are going to be talking about our favorite books of 2019. I will be posting a poll about your favorite read of 2020 on the Christian Historical Fiction Talk Facebook group. So if you don't belong to that group yet, it's not a private group. You should be able to find it and join it very easily. And that's where you'll be able to find the poll for the next podcast. So please check that out. Let me know what you enjoyed reading most in 2020. It was certainly a strange year, but it was a fabulous year in Christian historical fiction. So many good books came out. I've given you an impossible choice, really, but I'll also share with you what I thought were some of the best books of the year. Remember that the website for the podcast is christianhistoricalfiction.buzzsprout.com, and there you'll be able to find out more about Amy Lynn Green and about her book, Things We Didn't Say. I think in the interview, I one point called it Things We Couldn't Say. That's a different book by a different author, so make sure you look up Things We Didn't Say or click on the link in the show notes in order to purchase the book. I would also love it if you stopped by my website, which is liztolsma.com, and find out what I have going on over there. I had a book that released recently, Gold Digger, and I would be so grateful if you checked that out. And my latest World War II that released in October was The Refrain Within, and that's set in Hungary during World War II. So if you're a World War II fan, please check out The Refrain Within and let me know what you think. You can find that at liztolsma.com, and those books are both available wherever Christian books are sold. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you, and we will see you next time.